This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to streaming media, DVD, and Blu-ray. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this week are Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And Tom Jolliffe.
Hi, everyone.
Now, this week we have an action-packed lineup for you. We're going to kick off with a sequel to The Debt Collector, very imaginatively called Debt Collectors. Then we've got the Chris Hemsworth starring Extraction. Our short shot this week is going to be Held Up Sock. And we're going to round off with a bit of Roddy Piper in Jungle Ground. So let's crack on. So our first review is Debt Collectors. Even though we all thought they were dead, French and Sue actually made it out of the end of their last adventure, although needing some serious patching up. Each thinking the other is dead, they are eventually brought back together to undertake three more collections for the erstwhile boss Tommy. However, there is a catch once more. So this is just good news all round, guys, as far as I'm concerned. Chiefly, and it is a bloody cheat, but who gives a fuck? French and Sue are being brought back from the dead because, let's face it, yes, they bloody well did die at the end of the other film, you know. All the stuff with the cows really just sort of rammed home the fact that, yes, they were bloody dead. But, you know, obviously this... You know, this film, you know, he's seen sense. He realised that these characters, French and Sue, have got, you know, a lot more gas to the tank. And he's, you know, he's done a bit of convoluted retconning to sort of bring them back to life. And here we are. This is an improvement on the last film, I believe. Even though, there are similar beats to it. The characters are filled out much more. The fighting scenes... Although there seem to be fewer of them this time around, they are a bit more varied. There's a few sort of shoutbacks to the first film, which I quite enjoyed. How about you guys? Let's start with Tom.
Yeah, I just echo what you said there, really. It's an improvement on the last one, I thought. And I think everything feels a little bit sharper. There's some great lines in it, so it's consistently sort of entertaining. Hmm. I just like that. There's a nice sort of Shane Black element to it. Just feels like one of his old sort of buddy movies. Nice old fashioned, proper action film. The sort they used to make. And I'd,
You're absolutely right.
Adkins and Mandalore just make a great team. So I can sort of see why, you know, maybe they didn't expect it to be quite as successful as it was the first film.
Definitely.
Obviously, so they've ended up sort of retconning it and bringing them back. But of course, I'd definitely be down for another one if they do another one. Mm. Yeah, just really enjoyed it.
Rich, over to you.
Yeah, I inevitably loved it as well. It's all about the characters more than the story. The French and Sue, they just have a great banter between them. And Tom was just saying there with like the Shane Black quality. It's the banter, you know, it's like Shane Black movies have always been, you know, about those qualities. Even the Predator that I watched recently, the thing that was the best thing about it was the interactions between the characters. And so we get a lot of that here. There's a lot of character, not a huge amount of character development, but, you know, that they're anti-heroes. They're not good guys. That, you know, everyone in this movie is a bad guy, basically. They're sort of all... Everyone's it's like a gangster movie in that sense, but the guys are likable, you know, even when they're doing sort of, you know, stuff that's not particularly nice to sort of some people. But most of the people that they're going after are worse than they are so it's kind of guy. But it's interesting that, you know, Vladimir Kulich is back as what was his name,
Tommy.
And his character is very important to this story. Once again, but more so this time. And there's a real delving into the relationship between his character and Sue's character. Mm. But you know, not so much that it gets, you know, schmaltzy or anything. You know, these are, you know, gangsters at the end of the day. But there is a warmth and a you know, a the theme of loyalty, you know, comes through. And there, I think that's the sort of binding thing. They've got like a code, and they're up against gangsters who are, you know, who have no code, and in some cases are actually out for revenge.
There's a couple of interesting, there's lots of interesting things going on here, sort of on the sidelines. For example, French and Sue are being followed everywhere by these two characters, these sort of shady guys. Sue knows why they're there, but French doesn't.
Yeah.
Their sort of interaction's quite good. The cast is great. You know, not only we've got Vladimir Kulich in there, we've also got Marina Sirtis as the baddest bitch in bloody Las Vegas. And we've also got Vernon Wells turning up as sort of the head of the motorcycle gang, which was quite impressive. And he has a good little swearing match with with French, which is pretty cool.
Because they were both in Green Street too, weren't they?
I don't know, actually.
I'm just having a quick... Yeah, Vernon Wells was in it, and Marina... Yeah, so they were both in Green Street 2, which...
All right.
Jesse Johnson did back in 2009, so 10 years ago. So kind of bring, as far as I know, that's the only film that he's made with those two. So it's interesting. It was really nice to see them back. And Marina Sirtis's accent is like wandering all over the place.
I didn't even recognize her. That was the funniest thing, because obviously, you know, I only know her as Counselor Troy from Star Trek, but you know, that was really amusing. There is an interesting, what seems to be a bit of a theme starting to develop. It started with Avengement and carried on here. And that is this, a certain product placement.
Oh, the Rooster Rojo.
The Rooster Rojo, which is just great. I think it's hilarious.
Which is a real drink, I believe. I think it's product placement.
But I think it's of a winky product placement, you know what I mean? Because obviously people who watch his films are going to spot it straight away, you know. So I think it's a bit of a sort of wink to the audience as well. It works in so many ways in that way. Because, you know, for one thing, Sue won't drink it because he's given up alcohol. So French is having this look like, oh, yeah, this is lovely stuff and all the rest of it, which is quite amusing. It's absolutely great. Fighting again, the fight choreography by Luc Lafontaine, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's less brawly than the first film. There's a bit more dynamic to it this time around, which I thought was really cool. I love that fight at the bar at the beginning, you know, when the band strikes up. it's like, this fight needs a score. You know.
I want to shout out to Nils Allen Stewart behind the bar. I hadn't seen him in anything for years. He's done loads of stuff with Jesse Johnson, but yeah. I haven't seen him in like 10 years or something, and he's really got he's a lot bigger now than he was before. He was used to be quite lean, you know. I remember he had that very distinctive sort of plaited ponytail thing on his head. He was always great seeing in all those old movies. So it was nice. I got a particular kick about seeing him again.
Yeah. So you know, this is it's a great improvement. I mean, you know, Debt Collectors was a fun film. Sorry, the original Debt Collector was a fun film. It had great chemistry between Mandalore and Scott Atkins, but it ended on such a sour note, and I think everyone was pretty bummed out by it. So I'm glad, you know, for whatever reason, you know, if it was a financial reason or artistic reason, you know, they decided to bring back the pair. I think the world definitely needs French and Sue on screen. I'm really happy for Stu Smalls as well, continuing his streak of co-writing scripts with Jesse Johnson. So, you know, between Accident Man and Avengement and now this, you know, and the original Debt Collectors, so Debt Collector, I think he's doing really well. And, and you know, he obviously has a good sort of rapport with Scott And Scott Adkins is just like the most, he is the most articulate action guy you're ever going to come across. You know, I mean, he carries the dialogue so well.
Oh yeah, it's like completely natural for him as well, isn't it?
And this time, as Sue points out, he's got a bit of a mouth on him, and you know, he's sort of a little bit like his sort of Mike Fallon character in Accident Man, where you know he'll sort of like just give lip basically, you know, because he knows he can handle himself, he knows he can take anyone in the room, and yeah, boy can he basically.
He's very cocky.
he is a little bit, but. Even so, great to watch. And even, you know, shout out to Louis Mandelor, that, you know, the boxing scene, for a start, he seemed to be doing a lot of his own work in that. And then, that brawl he has with French as well, which I was wondering if that was a bit of a shout out to the fight in They Live.
And I was thinking exactly the same thing.
I think it very much is. Yeah.
Yeah, just put on the bloody sunglasses.
You know? The whole pace and everything, and you know, the location of that scene it's so on the nose. But that's brilliant. You know, I love that.
Yeah, so there you go. Scores, guys. I'm going to shout this out straight away. I'll give them this a 9 out of 10.
I'm going to go 8 out of 10 on this one.
Ooh, I'm on the fence now. I'll go for a 9 as well.
So 2 9s and an 8 for Deck Collectors. Look out for this one. Should be on the shelves or on streaming media in the middle of May. Our next review is Extraction. Tyler Rake is a black market mercenary who is hired to rescue the teenage son of an incarcerated drug lord in India. Shortly after rescuing the boy, however, Tyler and his team are betrayed by the drug lord's head of security, Seju, leaving him and the boy in a deep pile of shit. So this is directed by Sam Hargreaves?
Sam Hargrave, yeah.
Hargrave, thank you. But produced by the Russo brothers. So this has got a pretty strong pedigree. This is another example of a director who's got a big background in stunts and fight choreography, you know, taking over. And boy, does he. This is sterling stuff all the way through. There's a stunt early on where Chris Hemsworth's character, Tyler, is in Australia on top of this cliff. And the camera follows him as he just stands up, walks to the edge of the cliff, and just jumps off. And it's a 90-meter drop into this lagoon at the bottom. So either they got Chris Hemsworth to actually just step off this bloody ledge, or they did a really, really solid job of getting a stuntman to do it and then blending it in seamlessly with his walk to the edge. Because I just couldn't tell the difference, and it was stunning. But other than that, we've got a story about two special ops guys, because we also follow Sager as much as we follow Tyler in his attempt to get out of India, out of this city. And Sager, you know, he starts off, you think he's a piece of work, you know, because he's betrayed these guys and set them up. But then you find out his reasons for it, and the fact that he's actually got the boys interested, you know, at heart anyway. And he's kind of like this, almost like an anti-hero, even though he's sort of beaten, you know, getting beaten up by Tyler and beating him up and all the rest of it. Yeah, this is pretty amazing stuff. Let's go, Rich.
Well, I wouldn't say it was like pulling teeth, but I certainly didn't get as much out of it as you did. I was quite underwhelmed by the whole thing, to be honest. And I was quite surprised at that, because it sort of seemed like it would tick all the boxes. The problem was, I just felt like I'd seen it all before. And even though what was, you know, like the one take scene or the scene made to look like one take, you know, was impressive, you know, it's good. But it's kind of become a cliche now. We've seen that quite a lot. And it didn't, although it went on longer than Atomic Blonde, for example, the end result was essentially the same. I've got a theory that if you like Man on Fire with Denzel Washington, you probably love this. And I didn't like Man on Fire, which I felt this was basically Man on Fire 2.
I didn't particularly like Man on Fire. I'm not a big fan of Tony Scott's work as a whole.
Okay, all right. So my theory doesn't pan out.
Not totally, no.
It's the same kind of thing. You know, it's got that that Tony Scottish kind of look to it. Everything's sort of quite yellowy green. And the sort of wounded, you know, scarred, you know, badass character who's, you know, carrying some baggage looking for redemption. You know, that is quite a simple story. And that's no problem in itself, but I just felt it went on quite long. His character was basically John Rambo by way of Martin Riggs. I didn't find a huge amount to sort of connect with. Basically, I'm saying John Rambo because this guy is murdering. He is brutal as hell. You know, he's like stabbing people on pitchforks and all sorts. This is not a film that holds back in any way, shape, or form. It's very full on. You know, hard R action. I give it credit for that. But it's the problem I felt was although those scenes are, you know, quite intensely choreographed, the camera's moving up around way too much for me, and I found it was a bit woozy. I wondered if it was kind of a villainesque kind of thing they were going for in some of that stuff. Hemsworth was fine. I'm going to throw it over to Tom now he's probably a bit more positive about it than I am.
Yeah, bring it back to reality here.
I'm actually with you on this one, Rich.
Holy shit!
I'm sorry,
snap.
Mike.
I just take a stagger out of my back here.
Yeah, I think because there've been quite a few, you know, amongst action fans, quite a few good reviews for it. So I went in expecting a little bit more. In terms of the sort of the story and the character, it didn't really engage with me that much. Action wise, I mean, there's some good stuff in there. As you say, some set pieces are better than others. But I think it starts to get a little bit repetitive sort of from the halfway point onwards. And everything seems like they're trying to sort of do the same thing. And yeah, I think like Rich said, I think, you know, the use of the camera and the long takes, it just gets a little bit overboard at times. And then it starts to sort of intrude on the film for me. I think that's kind of like a little just a general pet peeve that I have with a lot of modern movies now. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I wasn't too keen on, again, this is more like a general thing, is there's a lot of sort of CGI sort of squibs and bullet hits and muzzle flashes, which I think that's just like that's the new way they do it now. But it's just something that sort of I'm not too keen on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's some nice set pieces, you know, particularly the sort of the first half before everything starts to get a bit samey. But I don't think it's one I'd watch again, if I'm being honest.
The bridge sequence at the end, because basically the entire last part of the film takes place about just trying to cross this bridge. Have we seen something else in another movie like that recently? Because it seemed a really familiar idea of somebody trying to cross a very limited space, but like ridiculous amount of odds against them. It couldn't come to mind what that film might have been. It doesn't matter. It's just, I was just wondering, but it was kind of that long take sequence and the bridge sequence are the kind of two things I remember, but I wasn't particularly excited by either of them. And the rest of it was, Hemsworth's character trying to protect the kid. You know, how many times have we seen the protecting a kid movie? I didn't get out of it. I quite enjoyed the element they brought in with the the guy working for the boy's father and how they were screwing him over, basically. And he was like sent in to take out the team and rescue the boy himself. I can't remember what convoluted reasons, whatever it was. But,
well, because they didn't have the money, because
that was it. Yeah,
because all his boss's assets have been frozen by.
That's it. Yeah. So that was quite interesting. That was quite an interesting dynamic. I really liked David Harbour's extended cameo kind of role in the middle. That was quite nice. I wasn't expecting him to turn up. But yeah, overall, yeah, I'm really surprised. I think me and Tom are in the minority on this, from what I've seen. But yeah,
I've seen people complaining about the kill count in this film, saying, "Oh my god, it's so sickening how many policemen he kills in this film." I was like, "Oh, for God's sake."
Well, there is that, but you know, the point. I mean, the police are corrupt, so yeah, I can kind of see the way around. Yeah. I mean, the police that he's killing probably don't know that they're working for a corrupt official, so you know, that is kind of thing. But it's not like in some of the Steven Seagal movies where he seems to completely forget that these aren't bad people or something. But the other thing that came to mind was that a lot of the stuff in it, and I know it's kind of the Russo factor, was making me think of Wolf Warrior 2, which I now realise this Sam Hargrave was the action director on that film. So it's not really surprising that some of the sequences felt quite similar. I mean, even the sort of location and aesthetic of the film is quite similar to Wolf Warrior 2.
It is, yeah. There are similarities for sure. Okay, so next week I'll be having two new hosts. No, Chris. I'm flabbergasted. This is totally up my street.
We've gasted your flabber, Mike.
I have. My socks have been knocked off. To a certain degree, I can probably see your argument, but I would have to watch it probably another two times before really sort of like picking it apart. The only thing which really annoyed me, and Rich, you should know this.
Is the in media res.
Fucking in media res. Seriously, guys. Starting your film with a bit on the bridge is no way to get me on board. Yeah, I was like... You know, you have the sequence, and I was like, I bet it's going to jump back like a week or something, and it sort of jumps back like 3 days and stuff. So bloody annoyed. But however much I was annoyed by that, I was kind of happy with the ambiguous last shot.
Yeah, I did think that was nice. I like that.
Yeah. I did like that because, you know what they say in film and TV, if you don't actually see them die, then they're not dead. You know, that is the rule of thumb. So, but also I was quite happy that Nikki, the female security person he worked with, actually went back and finished the job. I thought that was a nice bit as well.
You know what surprised me though? It's like, I was thinking, okay, this is a 2-hour movie. This can't be finishing yet, surely. There's 13 minutes left. No, there are 13 minutes of credits on this film.
Yes, there are.
13! Yeah. It's not even a sci-fi film or anything. The last minute of credits are...
the stunt guys. It's literally all the stunt guys and guys.
It's crazy. The credits run quite slow as well. I don't know why they did that, but the last minute of credits is actually the... is like tacked on Netflix credits of people who've done the dubbing. versions. So there's 12 minutes of credits plus that. But yeah, I was like, what? This book, it can't be finishing already.
There are a couple of there's a couple of making ofs knocking around. I've seen one on Facebook that somebody posted, and I know there's one on IMDb. The one on Facebook actually shows you the car chase sequence and how they filmed it. So you had the cameraman sort of like sitting on the bonnet of a car as it's following the other cars down the sort of tracks and that. And then having to sort of jump off and then run into the car and sort of hand the camera over to another person. So you get that sort of seamlessly fluid shot of, like, you know, the camera suddenly being inside the car, even though it was chasing the car earlier, which I thought was absolutely amazing. You know, a bit of a shout out to The Raid 2 for that one.
I haven't seen that. So the one I always think of, I think one of the first to do this kind of thing was Children of Men, surprisingly.
Yes, it was. Yeah. They did something similar as well.
But do you like this? Do you like that kind of the camera, you know, not cutting away, just continual shot kind of approach?
Sometimes, yes. I think it worked in Atomic Blonde, that fight on the staircase.
That was amazing.
Yeah. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Because sometimes the thing is, for like the villainess, that opening sequence of the villainess and Hardcore Henry, is that sometimes you end up in a situation where you feel like you're in a video game on rails. You know, like the old time code games and things like that. You know, you're not actually watching a film. You're being driven around by the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it can be distracting in that way. Where, you know, especially when it sort of takes on the point of view of a person.
Yeah.
Which it did in the villainess. You know, thinking, well, I don't know who this person is. Why am I her? You know, why am I doing all this stuff? It's just bizarre. It becomes less of a film in that way. But anyway, scores on the doors, guys. I almost dread to ask.
Tom, you go first.
I mean, I think, yeah, as you said, it's like 2 hours. If they would have trimmed it down a bit, I would have been a little bit more into it, just to get, you know, a quicker pace going through the film. I'm going to go for a 6.
And that is exactly what I've got written down here, Mike. That's 2 sixes. What are you giving it?
Well, I have to knock off a point for the in media res, which is why I'm giving it an 8. Yes, so 2 sixes and an 8 for Extraction, available on Netflix. Go watch it. See who's right. Our short shot this week is Helldopsoc, also known as A Sock and a Hard Place. A group of rich teenagers are kidnapped from a party and held for ransom. One of them, Sam, has the guts to try and escape, and just as well, because their captors don't intend to keep them alive once the ransom is paid. Now, Richard, we are very familiar with this director, because we covered Kill Mode, I believe it was
Kill Mode. Yeah. Can you pronounce his name? Because I'm scared to try.
Well, you know my record for pronouncing people's names.
I think it's Thies Mawis. Mewis. I think he's Swedish, isn't he? Dutch. Sorry, Dutch.
Yeah, Dutch. So yeah, Muse maybe.
Muse. Yeah. Apologies if you're listening to this.
Yeah. But anyway, so this is an 18-minute short. It starts brilliantly, absolutely brilliantly. So you have this long tracking shot in slow motion. So you've got all these sort of rich kid partygoers sort of on this balcony, and the camera's inside the room looking out. And, of course, you've got the balustrade in between the windows. And, you know, it's just panning sort of from slowly going from one window to the next. And as it gets to the last bit, there's a set of patio doors, and we see like 4 masked gunmen come rushing in. Just really, really well done. Really catchy pop tune over the top to go with it. And then we get this sort of this starkness of the, you know, where these people are being held, all tied up and sort of gaffer taped and everything. A really, really strong start to this. What do you think, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, the opening sort of made, I wasn't sure what was going to happen, because it sort of seems a bit dull, and I was like, this is going to be an action thing, right? And it sort of takes a little while to warm up, and then it's like, oh, and then it kicks in, like as you say, just sort of at the end of that tracking sequence. And what we get then is the shift. You get the title come up, and we move to the young people in the tied up, and from there it becomes a single shot sequence, and I thought it was really well done. The bit where they're tied up in the room, and you know, it's taking a little while to escape, there's not a lot to get in terms of aesthetics or anything about it. It's quite a cheap looking sequence. But once they venture out of there into the corridors, you know, lighting and everything all kicks in, and it's it looks really sharp. And the whole sequence is really well executed, I thought. The heroine of the story, you know, they don't establish that she's tough in any way, but you know, she's very resilient. We'll say that as much, and not afraid to get involved, and you know, she's go back a, and yeah. take on
Jackie Chan. She's got a sort of Jackie Chan aesthetic, doesn't she? Basically, without the actual skills, she's just got that sort of like I just can't give up sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, and she takes a real beating in the story, which continues from a corridor to a cupboard to the exit, and then kind of back again. It's very, very limited space, very, you know, sort of taking place in real time kind of story. And I thought the cinematography and the choreography was excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that, you know, you got these sort of like, it comes back to that sort of confidence factor as well. And, you know, this sort of inherent sadistic nature of these guys that, you know, certainly when you think, yeah, they're probably sort of toying with her, you know, they could easily kill her in like, two moves, but you know, but they don't. They just sort of keep just. No, I'm just going to sort of slap around a bit, and eventually she gets the upper hand and sort of like, you know, sort of kills one of them, and yeah, and there's that moment, you know, that she almost escapes, and then she hears on the tannoy where they've paid the ransom, kill them, and then has to go back. You know, she's compelled to go back and try and help, which yeah, it's really really cool, and it's bleak, you know, it's very gritty and bleak, probably quite realistic in that regard, as to, you know, what would probably happen in that sort of scenario.
I quite liked at the end that it, you know, the story as it is concludes, but then as the credits are playing, the next part of the story starts, and then it kind of ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I posted a message on Vimeo this morning after I watched it going, is there going to be a sequel? You know, you're kind of crying out for one at the moment. But yeah, no, you know, and that was quite amusing as well. The fact you, you know, there's like, well, there's a motorbike. Like, oh wait, there's a car. No, there's a horse. yeah, no.
Tom, did you get a chance to take a look?
I didn't, unfortunately. I think Vimeo wasn't in the mood for me to have a look. The bits I did see, it did look interesting though, so it's definitely one that I will go back and have a look at.
I definitely recommend you do so. If you don't get a chance to watch Kill Mode, which was the feature we reviewed back on episode 95 or 96.
95.
Which I think we agreed the first half was really, really good. The second half was just one long chase slash fight sequence, which didn't go anywhere, you know. But having said that, you know, the, sort of what he did with the budget was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, that was another film that opened with a long sort of one take scene, didn't it? And then it sort of shifts into other things. It didn't really do the one take thing a huge amount, but that opening again, sort of 10 minutes or so, I think, is quite continuous, although less. Different way it's done, but yeah, I mean, he really knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and we want to see Molly at some point.
Yeah, which was the prequel to Kill Mode.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, but anyway, so yeah, this is definitely worth seeking out. It's on Vimeo. We'll put the link into the footnotes. We definitely recommend you check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is Jungle Ground. Set in a not-too-distant future, the district known as Jungle Ground is something of a no-go area for police. Being taken over by a young drug lord calling himself Odin and his gang the Ragnarokkers. When a police drug sting operation goes horribly wrong, Lieutenant Jake Cornell finds himself at the mercy of the gang. Instead of merely killing him, though, Odin gives Cornell the chance to make it back to civilization if his men don't hunt him down first. So there's a lot going on here. Got dystopian futures kind of thing, sort of rundown area being taken over by gangs. And we've got Rowdy Roddy Piper is stuck in the middle of it. So, Tom, what did you think of this?
I really enjoyed this one, actually. This was a bit of a surprise to me. I've always been a Piper fan anyway. Yeah, I think he's always been one of those guys that's really sort of underrated and probably deserved a bigger break than he got after, you know, doing something like They Live.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, and he always throws himself into what he's doing. So, you know, the fight scenes and the stunts, he's just sort of, he does it with vigor. And yeah, this was just really good fun. It's solid 90 minutes. It breezes by and it's over by before you know it in sort of a good way. Yeah, I've always enjoyed those kind of films anyway. And this felt to me a little bit, you know, it felt like a PM film to me.
Especially that initial explosion, you know, when the drug guy goes to deliver the pizza thing.
Yeah.
That block of flats and every single window explodes outwards. Brilliant.
Just like a PM film with a touch more polish as well, I thought. But yeah, just a lot of fun. It's one I'd really recommend if you want a good solid B movie.
I'm a Roddy Piper fan as well. He's grew up watching him on the wrestling and enjoyed his films as well. I mean, I was never a huge fan of They Live, but there was some of the other films that he made, which I can't remember. He was always. I haven't actually seen that one.
We might worth seeing.
We have to do that in a future throwback, I think. I can't remember what it was, but it was mainly from wrestling that I enjoyed him. But he's, you know, there's things like Last to Surrender and that where he's a bit racist in that, which is basically a Red Heat knockoff. But he's got this great charisma, you know, and that was what made him so great as on the wrestling as well. But this was the first time I kind of looked at him and thought, you know what, he really looks like Robert Redford. You know, if Robert Redford was an action star, he'd be Roddy Piper. You know, he had that particular sort of haircut in this one, and he's wearing that big coat. And he's when he gets into his proper, he gets into like that gang outfit in the latter part of the film and starts actually fighting people, you know, a bit. And that was where his physicality really comes through, and he's doing some wrestling moves on him and stuff. But apart from that, I was quite disappointed that he didn't really have a lot to work with in this. His character is established at the start, and he does that great thing where he's, you know, he goes to see his girlfriend and she basically jumps into his arms, which I thought was pretty cool. And he carries her upstairs and they establish that he wants to propose to her. But then his character doesn't really get anything more to do. And it's the supporting characters, the baddies who, you know, as in a lot of action movies, the baddies are more colourful than the hero. In this case, there's all of them. We're very much in this kind. It's the kind of world that VFW was an homage to, you know, that punks are ruling. In this case, it's Ontario? No, Toronto. It's Toronto in Canada, where Jungle Ground is, which is this no-go area with all the punks and that, which have all got their sort of. Funny, I mean, I watched Death Wish 3 recently, and, you know, it's all the way back to there, you know, all these punks with their distinctive comic booky kind of qualities and names. So there's a guy in here called Game Show, and he quotes lines from game shows and rides roller and is on rollerblades. And there's Dragon, who's his brother, and as the whole thing about the Norse mythology, which is kind of a bit weird because they're called the Ragnarokers, and a few of them, there's Loki and Thor and Odin, who's the main bad guy. But then all the others, they're like, no, we'll just call you, you know, Game Show or whatever it is. So those characters were a lot more fun, and I think the actors had much more to work with. I mean, the guy playing Odin, J.R. Bourne, I don't recall him from other things, but I know I've seen him in other stuff.
Yeah,
he's got a very familiar face. The rest of the cast, I didn't notice them until it was only in the credits. I think there's a few people who went on to other things, like Lexa Doig was one of the. Was I think her name was Spider in this. She went on to do like Jason X and the CI5, the New Professionals on Sky and stuff like that. And there's another actor in it. I can't remember what their name was, but yeah, there's a couple of people who went on to other things. But, yeah, so I thought it was okay, personally, but it didn't blow my socks off or anything.
I really enjoyed this. I mean, it's you know, it's a solid, entertaining film, basically. It's not amazing or anything. It certainly seemed better. But it passes the time. It you know, does what it says on the tin. It was interesting. I recently joined a group of action fans on Facebook, and they posted this, and I was like, I've never heard of it. And then I found out it was on Amazon Prime. I thought, yes, okay, we need to sort of take a look. There is another one with Casper Van Dien that I want to sort of check out called The Tracker, which has also been recommended on the same forum. But yeah, I love the fact that we can still, you know, even though we are sort of hardened sort of, you know, action fans, I think we've seen everything and done everything, VHS, and it turns out, no, there's little hidden gems sort of knocking around for us to still check out, which is really, really cool. So I think I mentioned ages ago, or when I was watching this, that there are a couple of little parallels between this and Extraction, in that the, you know, you have this guy who's like one of the bad guys, but ends up sort of like kind of becoming a good guy by the end of it, when he realizes that his sort of morals and beliefs are being betrayed by his boss.
That was an interesting dimension, I thought, to the story.
Yeah, and the whole thing with the, you know, obviously he has to sort of run this sort of gauntlet and try and get to sort of safety, you know, sort of typical sort of like Warriors-esque kind of...
it's scenario. Kind of a Hunt the Human theme again, isn't it? Like the hard target-y kind of, we're gonna let you go because we wanna hunt you down. Mm. we wanna make a sport of you. And then it's like, why didn't you just kill him?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, sort of decision that you come to regret later on, basically. But yeah, this is a solid little film. It's no Extraction, but for something which is hanging around on Amazon Prime that nobody's ever heard of, it really deserves a look. And if you're an action fan, if you're not Roddy Piper fan, if you're a Warriors fan, you'll probably get something out of this. So check it out. That is Jungle Ground on Amazon Prime.
Before we finish off, I just want to say that the when we were talking about Debt Collectors, we mentioned They Live, which I thought was a nice sort of tie-in to then. I mean, that was completely coincidental, but then talking about Jungle Ground. But this one's got all the Thor references and stuff, which ties in also with Chris Hemsworth in Extraction. So I don't think we could have picked a more perfect film to be talking about in this episode.
True, yeah. Anyway, there you go. That is Jungle Ground. Check it out on Amazon Prime. Okay, that's the end of this week's show. So thank you very much to Tom and Rich for joining me and for arguing over Extraction. I'll never forgive you guys. Of course I will. So tune in again next time. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.